Faithful Radio is pleased to present Church of the Masses with award-winning Catholic columnist, screenwriter, and media consultant, Barbara Nicolosi.
Hello again, and welcome to Church of the Masses. We are very honored to be doing a show here on the Virgin Most Powerful Radio Network. Please do support Virgin Most Powerful Radio. They have a site on a website. They have a page on Facebook, as do I, by the way. If you are interested in what we're talking about here on Church of the Masses, please go to my Facebook page and let me know what you'd like to talk about. If there's a movie you want me to review or a television show, please go ahead and put it down there, and I will do my best to respond to that. So, the name of our show comes from a quote by a 1930s theater critic, which is that movies are the new church of the masses. They are places where people sit in the dark and watch people in the light tell them what it is to be human. My view is that culture is probably the last area of mission field for many people today, and we in the church are not doing our part to really bring the word of God to the world through the media of communications. So the aim of the show is to encourage that, encourage evangelization, encourage pre-evangelization, what John Paul II called art in a minor key for a time of apostasy and persecution. He said that that was what Christians had to pioneer in the early days of the church, and that maybe today we needed a similar art in a minor key, that is very imagery-laced, metaphor-based art. And so it's worth reflecting on that. In this 20th anniversary of the Letter to Artists, I would encourage you to check that out and see what he was talking about. So usually the first segment here, we do a kind of roundup of the news. And the big news this week in terms of art was the destruction of a lot of the Cathedral of Notre Dame in Paris. I was at a party this weekend, an Easter party, and people were sitting around the table, not Catholics, and saying they were faithful Christians, but they were saying it felt like a gut kick watching that church burn. It felt so full of despair watching it burn. Many of us felt that way watching the church on fire, that in some ways it just seemed like such a talk about a metaphor for this moment where the church is under so much attack from the inside in terms of unfaithful priests, people who are teaching not according to the deposit of faith, but teaching their own new gospel in the highest levels of the church, that this is causing tremendous suffering and confusion in the church. And the fact that people are not going to church, the churches are emptying out because of various scandals in the church and just confusion, the lack of authoritative teaching. And so watching Notre Dame on fire really hit us all, I think. It made us all feel, is this a sign that God finally is abandoning us for all of our sins? Is he leaving us to our own devices? I know it felt that way to me. And I want to talk about what we were mourning while we watched Notre Dame burn, and then the problem of, can Notre Dame actually be rebuilt? Do we have that ability? So it seems to me that that we're mourning with the burning of Notre Dame. One of the things that I was hearing in the voices of people was, is it even going to be possible for us to put this back the way it was? And already, it's interesting, already there are people who are saying, well, we shouldn't put it back the way it was. We should get new architects who can design a new, interior or roof and spiral of Notre Dame that would be more befitting of today instead of what the cathedral has been. The spire was a 19th century add-on, but not at all in consonant with the whole structure. But some of the sketches that I've seen, even just since the burning, are quite inconsonant to me. They're not, there's like a proposal to put on a new bubbly glass roof and a glass very modern spire on top of it. And again, people are saying, well, we should put our own spin on this. The fire is an occasion for us to do that. So part of the mourning, I think, that's going on is that people are saying, wow, we may never pass this way again with Notre Dame. Do we even have the ability to rebuild it the way it was? Have we lost that in the church? And in many ways we have, right? The original Notre Dame was built in the 12th century, I believe. And these were artisans who did this for God, families that had been stone cutters for generations, or who had been carvers of wood, or the makers of the stained glass windows. My goodness, these were people whose families had passed down this craft generation through generation. And all of those family guild art communities have been dismantled. They don't exist anymore. And so now you say, wow, and then so there's that problem. We don't technically know how to remake some of the things that were lost. But remember too, that people did this for God. They weren't being paid anywhere near what their efforts were worth, because they understood they were doing something beautiful for God, and their family was going to forever be able to kind of stand in front of God and say, see, we did that for you, right? Now, today, you just can't do that. Artists won't work for free. They won't. Most artists will not be coming. The best artists won't be coming from a place of faith. I remember when we built the LA Cathedral out here, I wasn't part of it, but the Monstrosity, which is the Los Angeles cathedral to Our Lady Queen of the Angels, is, I believe, only one of the main artists who worked on it was actually a believer. And that was the person who, probably not surprisingly to most, did the tapestries, which are the best part of the Cathedral of Los Angeles. Everything in it is very odd and kind of ugly, including the shape of the building itself. It's a place you go in and you go, wow, this is big, but you don't necessarily feel like praying. And I think that part of that was that the artists who were contracted at a cost of $210 million that the Cathedral of Los Angeles was built. So you're paying for the best you can get, and yet they were not people of faith. So the work of their hands didn't reflect devotion, and that makes it kind of cold and kind of empty. So I think that when we are hearing people in France say, well, we should bring in modern architects, we should try to put our own modern spin on the reconstruction of Notre Dame Cathedral, I think a lot of us are mourning when we hear that, because we are just very much doubting that they are going to be able to create or recreate the space that created a climate of prayer. Pope Benedict said that is the role of the arts in the church, is to get all of us together in a common climate of prayer. He said that the arts, for example, the music at liturgy, should take all of us coming in from our disparate places. Everyone comes in with their own. Some people are happy, some are sad, some people worry about money, some people worry about jobs, worry about their kids, whatever. But everybody comes into church from a different place. But then the art, the music, the liturgical environment puts us all onto the same page. A beautiful hymn could kind of raise us all up, and we're on the same page. So in the same way, Notre Dame, this amazing place, when you walked in, created a climate of prayer. You wanted to pray. That reminded me of one time I took a friend from Hollywood. She was a new convert to St. Peter's in Rome, and we walked through the door of the Vatican. And if you've been there, you know what I'm talking about. It was about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and the rays were falling through the windows and just kind of falling over the main altar there. And I kind of walked in. I'd been there several times before, and I was kind of giving the tour thing. Oh, here's the Pietà. Up there's the thing. And then all of a sudden, I realized my friend wasn't with me, and I turned around, and she was standing about 10 feet inside the door, just looking with her mouth, agape. And I went over to her. I said, what's wrong? And she said, I am never talking to anyone about Catholicism again until they've been here. In other words, the stunning power of this beautiful place was this testimony to the fact that our faith is true. In fact, Pope Benedict actually says that the two greatest proofs that the Catholic Church is true are the lives of her saints and the beauty of her works of art. So I think that, again, a lot of us watching the Notre Dame destruction there, we're like, are we ever going to see this again? Are we going to see something impressive and like the LA Cathedral, but not really something that leads us all into a climate of prayer? Have we lost that? Have we lost the ability to even do that anymore through the arts? They're just not enough faith-filled artists who can work at the highest levels of their craft. I've experienced this many years working in Hollywood. One of the biggest challenges for Christians making movies, which is my art form, visual stories, is we just don't have the chops that we can have the highest intentions to do something beautiful and good, but we don't have in our community amazing writers, amazing musicians, amazing directors. We have some that are good and some that are getting better, but we don't have anywhere near the numbers that the pagans do, but they don't believe. And so this is the challenge of something like the Notre Dame problem. Huh? So let's pray that that Notre Dame can be put back the way it was, that this will be a moment of faith for France and for all of us. Stay tuned to the second part, second segment of Church of the Masses.
This is Terry Barber inviting you, all the men, to a men's conference June 15th at the Sacred Heart Chapel. This is going to be a day where we're going to talk about true masculinity. You know, there's a problem in the Catholic Church today. We have very few men who love the Catholic faith. And I know a lot of the wives that I'm listening to right now are saying, I want my husband to be on fire for the faith. Send him to the men's conference. Your son, send him to the men's conference by going to virginmostpowerfulradio.org or call 877-526-2151. That's June 15th. When your husband comes back from this conference or your son, they're going to have a different view about their Catholic faith because they're going to meet three men who love Jesus and his bride, the church, and are going to instill in them a love for Christ and his church, the Eucharist, Our Lady. Bring them to virginmostpowerfulradio.org. Sign up there or call 877-526-2151. Full sheen ahead.
It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. Please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, CatholicRC.org.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Church of the Masses with Barbara Nicolosi.
And welcome back to Church of the Masses. And very happy that you're tuning in. And we have a very good, neat guest right now. One of the big stories in media, if you're a Christian, is the opening of the movie Breakthrough this weekend. I was on CBS Sunday Morning this past week. It's up there on the internet. You can find it somewhere. And they did a whole, like one of the quarter segments of the show on basically breakthrough and what it means for Christian film. So I think that it was clear to everybody at CBS and a lot of people in the mainstream that breakthrough is a little bit of a breakthrough in terms of Christian film. And one of the reasons is it had an amazing cast. You have people like Chrissy Metz and Topher Grace in it. Now, we've had Jennifer Garner starred in one, and Jim Caviezel, not Jim Caviezel, obviously The Passion. I'm trying to think of Steve Carell was in one. This movie felt less like a little Christian guerrilla filmmaking project and more like a mainstream movie. And so in many ways, some of us are hoping it will be a breakthrough, at least because it did utilize very good talent in terms of the acting, cinematography. And this is something that Christian film is not known for, excellence. So what we have here today with us now, a very, very grace to have, is the actual pastor who figures largely in this story. And so if you haven't seen Breakthrough, we're going to have some spoilers here in this segment. But you can, hopefully won't ruin it for you. But please join me in welcoming Pastor Jason Noble to Church of the Masses. Pastor, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for the opportunity. It's great to be here and great to share with you the story and share with your listeners. We're excited to see what God's doing.
Yeah. And so, my audience is mainly a Catholic audience here. So it's kind of neat when we can celebrate a project that's coming from our brethren, outside of the church. And yet I really do think that Breakthrough could be that movie, because ultimately this is a movie about prayer and faith, what we share in common at our most basic level.
Exactly. And I look at it as a kingdom deal, where the denominational walls and all the things come down. And like you say, we're standing on what's important to all of us, which is prayer and salvation and, our faith, and seeing that in action, being able to see a God who can still do the impossible when we need him to. Especially in our times of greatest need. I mean, I think across the board, what I've seen and talking to folks is how much of a need there is for breakthrough in people's lives today. Mm-hmm. And so it comes at a great time.
Yeah. I think that watching it, even myself, and I'm I try to think I'm a person of prayer, I'm somebody who's into it, and I'm in the program, right? But still, watching the movie, it made me say, wow, could my prayer really be that powerful? Could that ever happen to me? And I think those are good questions for Christians to ask.
They are.
Yeah. But maybe we should not get too ahead of ourselves here. And just for those who haven't seen the movie, without giving too much away, do you want to just give the basic kind of basic plot summary, and then we'll talk about your role in the story?
Yeah, definitely. So John Smith, 14 years old, fell through the ice in Lake St. Louis on Martin Luther King Day in 2015, January 19th. He was under for 15 minutes. And when they finally, at the last minute, they were able to pull him out, and they worked on him for another 45 minutes. Essentially, when they pulled him out, he was dead. He was gray, icicles hanging off of his body. Worked on him for another 45 minutes at a Catholic hospital, which we're very thankful for the Catholic hospitals.
Cardinal Glennon, I think, right?
It started out at St. Joe's West, which was part of the SSM group. And then, after the fact, they moved him to Cardinal Glennon. But when they got him to St. Joe's West, they worked on him for another 45 minutes, so an hour and 8 minutes altogether, without pulse, without oxygen, and they got ready to call time of death. And they invited his mom into the room, and she walked in the room and she prayed, "Holy Spirit, bring my son back to life." And God's power filled that room. It wasn't just a minute. It wasn't just 5 minutes. It was the moment she prayed, his heartbeat came back and he was breathing. And so from there, they did life flight him down to Cardinal Glennon. They said that he was still brain dead at that point. They said there was about a 1% chance he would make it. If he made it overnight, he'd be a vegetable for the rest of his life. I mean, so the prognosis was not good. I mean, nobody makes it underwater for 15 minutes without oxygen. I mean, without just you know, no one in the world has made it. And so we took a group of pastors in the room and we just started praying, had incredible miracles that moment when we prayed in his room, which are all chronicled in the book. And, you know, I knew at that moment, I walked out to Joyce and I said, I don't know how, I'm not sure how God's going to do this, when he's going to do it, but John is going to walk out of this hospital. I know it beyond a shadow of a doubt from what we saw in the room and what God did. And from there, I mean, just through a series of incredible miracles, praying community, incredible hospital staff, John walked out of the hospital 16 days later, completely healed.
Wow. You know, I was watching the movie, Pastor, and saying to myself, yeah, is this really true? Because, you know, I'm somebody who writes movies. I've worked in the industry a long time. And I know, you know, we fudge true stories to make them a little bit more dramatic, you know. But so, I mean, really, she prayed and he just came back. I mean, that really happened.
Yes. And I will tell you, a good majority of the movie really happened. Mm-hmm. Timelines were changed a little bit. Mm-hmm. There was a little bit of conflict put in. Mm-hmm. Like when you see the movie, you know, it shows me going in and tearing a schedule off of a women's ministry class.
Right. Yeah.
Never do that.
I was like, no evangelical pastor I know on the planet would do that. So.
Exactly. You might do it to the guys in men's ministry, but not to the women. Then Joyce and I also did not ever have any ounce of conflict. And so we've actually never fought or had anything. But what that was, it was a composite character of everything that I was facing as a new young pastor at the church. Mm-hmm. And so, but as far as like the hospital scenes and, you know, the tear coming down, I mean, just all of the stuff across the board, it pretty much is right on how it happened.
That's amazing. Amazing. So are you, I hear in your voice that you're pretty pleased with the movie as it's come out.
Very pleased. Yeah, I'm very pleased with it. You know, When we approached and we came to Hollywood with this, you know, they invited us to come and be a part of the consulting of it and all of that. Joyce and I kind of decided, you know, there's probably two or three big rocks and the rest we're just going to trust Devon with. And that's exactly, you know, we've done that. And Devon Franklin has been an incredible producer and just putting the story together and really holding to it. You know, he made that promise to us and he's held out. I mean, it's been incredible.
Sure. I can imagine, when you found out that they were, you know, this wasn't going to be little Christian guerrilla thing, that they were going to bring in stars of the caliber of Chrissy Metz and Topher Grace. I mean, how did that feel to you?
It was incredible. I mean, the whole thing for us is like kind of a pinch me moment. I mean, because we never went looking for the film. We never, you know, that was never on our radar screen. And then to see it turn into what God's done with it has just been amazing. Wow. And God told us very early on, he said, if you'll remain humble, I'll take this project far.
Wow.
And so that's what we've tried to do and just really walk it out in humility and just thank God for all he's done.
Yeah. You know, so how about, you know, let's go back to the actual event. When this happened, you know, in the movie, you see the whole kind of church family. It just seems like everybody is touched to pray.
Right.
I was watching it and I was like, wow, what was going on there that everybody, was it that John was just an extraordinary kid, or was it just something that was the Holy Spirit just like softening everybody's hearts? But that kind of, especially there was the scene, you know, of who prayed for him, you know, and everyone stood up in the church. It's so right. impressive. And so what do you think?
That actually happened.
Yeah. From your standpoint, what was it that got everybody to really get on their knees and pray here?
So my standpoint, my perspective is that this was all during the Michael Brown stuff in St. Louis. That was happening all around us in the city. The city had been on fire, you know, the racial tension. And I think for this story to come out, one, St. Louis people are great people. They have a heart for each other and they love each other. But I think that with this situation, especially, everyone had just been through all of the Black Lives Matter stuff, all of the things that had gone on. And I think this community was looking for hope.
Wow.
And when they saw that John had went down, you know, and I think it could have been really, I think it could have been anybody. I think it could have been anybody in the circle that had a need. They came together and stood for his healing and stood alongside the family.
Wow. And so now the community gets to revisit the whole thing through the movie. So what's been the response in the church community to watching themselves on film?
You know, it's been strong. I mean, in the top 10 theaters in the nation, three of them are in the St. Louis area right now. Huh. And so, I mean, the response has been incredible. And, you know, from what I hear, my wife and I live now in Medford, Oregon. So we went to work full time on the film, doing church engagement and marketing, to help other churches get on board with it. So as far as like being in the community, from everything I've heard, it's been great.
You know, Pastor, I had one question watching it, which is, and it kind of comes out in the movie with the teacher character who says, you know, my husband died, and she tries to get John to tell her why, you know, why didn't I get a miracle? What's your answer to people when that question is posed? You know, how come this kid comes back to life? So many, you know, I'm getting over breast cancer from last year. And I know, thank God right now, you know, I seem to be doing okay. But I saw so many people who weren't, you know, and you say, okay, why do some, you know, is it that they're just not praying? Or, you know, what is your answer as a pastor to that, you know, teacher in the movie? Yeah.
It's a great question. I mean, it's a question that I think the Christian community needs to struggle with a little bit and really answer, you know, for people that are walking through things. And it's a multifaceted answer. You know, I think that God never promised that we weren't going to have suffering. God never promised that life would be easy. And I think sometimes we look at the Christian life and we think, well, it's going to be this nice package with a bow on the top. And the reality of it is isn't necessarily that way. You know, people will say, hey, does God always heal? And I will say, yes, he always heals. It may not be how we want it, mm-hmm. and not be, you know, exactly how we had thought it was going to happen. You know, if somebody dies, mm-hmm. you know, people ask, does that mean that God didn't heal them? And I tell them, no. I mean, when you look at that, God healed them as they were standing before him and walking into heaven. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's taking our eyes off the temporal and saying, okay, for eternity, how do I process this with eternity in mind? How do I process this with the fact that we're all going to die? There's not one of us that makes it out of here alive. Mm-hmm. I mean, and so really, I think the greatest miracle that we see is salvation.
Yeah.
And so when somebody has eternity, mm-hmm. that's not an easy answer for somebody that's walking through the loss of a loved one, mm-hmm. or walking through the suffering. I mean, you know, and so that's something that, man, I think we have to really talk through and go, okay, so.
Yeah, no, you know, it reminds me of Jesus saying, you know, when they asked him, was this man born blind for his sins? It's like, no, it was to show the glory of God. You know, Pastor, exactly. Thank you so much. Everybody go out and see Breakthrough, and hopefully we can keep it in the theaters. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
This is Terry Barber inviting you, all the men, to a men's conference June 15th at the Sacred Heart Chapel. This is going to be a day where we're going to talk about true masculinity. You know, there's a problem in the Catholic Church today. We have very few men who love the Catholic faith. And I know a lot of the wives that I'm listening to right now are saying, I want my husband to be on fire for the faith. Send him to the men's conference. Your son, send him to the men's conference by going to virginmostpowerfulradio.org or call 877-526-2151. That's June 15th. When your husband comes back from this conference or your son, they're going to have a different view about their Catholic faith because they're going to meet three men who love Jesus and his bride, the church, and are going to instill in them a love for Christ and his church, the Eucharist, Our Lady. Bring them to virginmostpowerfulradio.org. Sign up there or call 877-526-2151. Full sheen ahead.
It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. Please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, CatholicRC.org.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Church of the Masses with Barbara Nicolosi.
Welcome back to Church of the Masses. My name is Barbara Nicolosi. I am a... What am I? My goodness, I'm a screenwriter. I am a producer. I have been a story consultant in Hollywood. I've been someone who gives notes on screenplays. I've given notes on commercials. I've given notes on documentaries, executive produced documentaries and web series. I've produced theater, and I am a professor of screenwriting and great books. I teach at Azusa Pacific University here in Southern California. So kind of been involved for about 22 years in this world of making media and culture. So what I'm going to do now is review the movie Breakthrough. We just were very honored to have Pastor Jason on, who is figures largely in the true story of Breakthrough. So as he said, this is a movie that was produced here in Hollywood by Hollywood producer Devon Franklin, and he's known to be a man of faith. At the same time, they really did try to make it a little bit more mainstream by casting actors, Topher Grace, who else is in it? Obviously, Chrissy Metz plays the lead, Josh Lucas plays the father in the family. Mike Coulter plays the fireman who saves or finds the body of John. So the lineup was quite surprising for a Christian movie. These are all actors with chops who know what they're doing and who have pretty big credits. So in some ways, this says, wow, Christian movies are really becoming a thing that's okay. And that they're not being shunned anymore by especially actors. When you're talking about an actor like Chrissy Metz, she's on a top show, This Is Us, and she's a huge following. So good. That may mean that Christian movies are finally going to maybe start becoming something good, something well made, I mean, instead of being scorned. Having said that, so I'm looking at Rotten Tomatoes, which, if you're not familiar with RottenTomatoes.com, it's a site that synthesizes, kind of puts together all of the critical reviews of whatever's in the theater. So the score of Breakthrough is 64%, which is good for a Christian movie. Usually the Christian movie scores are in the low 20s and 30s. So the score they get by, they bring together all of the reviews of the mainstream industry. So in this case, 50 critics reviewing Breakthrough, and they give it 1 to 5 stars, and then that gets synthesized. So 64% is pretty good for a Christian movie. The audience score is 77%, not surprisingly. Usually the Christian movies, the Christian audience likes them much better than the mainstream critics. So having said that, most of the critics, the top critics, are giving it a splat as opposed to a healthy tomato, which is the way they kind of do the review system on Rotten Tomatoes. So your top, your top reviewers, Roger Ebert, Newsday, the New York Post, looking here through a whole bunch of the other top ones, they really kind of don't like the movie. Exception is Los Angeles Times. Katie Walsh gives a positive review to the movie. So what did I think? Well, I said to the reporter from CBS News who interviewed me about the movie I feel like when I saw the trailer that I've seen the whole movie. And he said, yeah, that's true. And I said to him, what did you think of the movie? And he said, well, there was a lot of praying in it. There was too much praying in it for me. And so, yeah, I think that the movie screenplay could have been much more intriguing, such that you would have had more paradox dealt with. And the movie kind of is what it is. It's very, everything is earnest. Everything is happening exactly one-dimensional. So the characters say exactly what they think and feel. There's no real, there's no irony and there's no subtext. Now, this is a hallmark of evangelical filmmaking. They are very leery about putting in anything that would make the audience have to brood or think. The tradition of Catholic art is that we love paradox. So if you look at some great Catholic stories from the 20th century, movies like stories like Graham Greene's *The Power and the Glory*, or *Brideshead Revisited* by Evelyn Waugh, anything by Flannery O'Connor, Walker Percy's work, Sigrid Undset's *Kristen Lavrin's Daughter*. These are just a few of the classics. All of them are about very conflicted people, a very almost twisted people who are wrestling with God and wrestling with revelation in their own lives and their own spirit. Breakthrough in the evangelical tradition is more about people who are very, very lovely, very good. They don't, they're not really kind of having any kind of gripping, gut-wrenching crisis of faith. And it's like, this is even though that's about a little boy who is dead and then comes back to life. But I say nobody in the movie is really a character who's I would say wrestling like, Jacob with his angels, that we're worried about someone really, really kind of losing their soul and going to despair. You don't see that. You see, there is the one character of the teacher who says, why did my husband die? But even that is done with such a light touch. It doesn't really get to the realm of paradox or subtext. So what I want to say is the performances are very good. They are surprisingly good, but for a Christian movie, not surprisingly for the level of stars they put there. Chrissy Metz can do much more than she was asked to do in this movie. We know that from This Is Us. She can play a lot more subtext than she was asked to do. She makes the material better by her presence on screen and by the emotional quality she's able to find. I think that's true of most of the cast. They were better than the material here. The screenplay is the problem. There wasn't really the arc of the main character, which is the mother. They make her the protagonist, is very unconvincing. We don't really see what how she really needs to grow, except that she's kind of a little bit snippy at people because her son is laying there near death on the table. We all accept that anybody would. But yeah, so that seems to be like her arc is, snippiness. And so then they're trying, the movie's struggling really hard to give her a darkness to light kind of trajectory where it just doesn't seem to be there in the material. And I wish that the writer had pushed a little deeper. I had the same wish about the movie Unplanned, by the way. I think both of these movies are groundbreaking for us, for Christians in cinema in different ways, but neither of them really get into the realm of mystery, get into the realm of that encounter with God that happens really through the dark night of the soul. I don't see our movies yet having that much faith in our audience. I was affected. I cried when the mother is over her son's body crying. There's something about a parent watching, especially a mother watching her child be dead there on the table, that it's just a terrible, terrible thing. And her crying out to God, it really did affect me. So that worked in the movie. But after the boy comes back to life, then it just kind of levels out. And then the next problem of the movie is, well, is he going to be brain damaged or not? And so she's just like long scenes of talking about that. Just a lot of very talky people standing around a hospital bed talking. No imagery at all that would have helped us get a handle on the deeper spiritual issues that the characters are going through. The father's arc is completely unexplored. He's really just a foil. And the mother's arc is, as I said, it's not really clear what we're hoping for from her. You know, finally they have her up on the roof and she's saying, "I surrender." But we're not really clear what it is she's surrendering to. So there's that. But it was, again, very affecting to me watching the scenes of people kind of being moved to join in the prayer. That did work. Now, my friend at CBS said, just too much praying for me. You know, it wasn't entertaining. And that is a consideration that, you know, watching people hold hands and then go into prayer, and then you have an evangelical rock worship band come kind of over the top while you watch people holding hands or staring at sunsets together or whatever, and everyone's praying. That is, it's kind of the anti-spectacle of Hollywood movies, right? Hollywood movies for spectacle uses car crashes and special effects. Christian movies for spectacle use rock worship bands over people, you know, scenes of people praying, staring at sunsets. So I think that less is more in a Christian movie. When you're talking about prayer, you don't need to see five scenes of it. Having, you know, then they'll say, well, that's what this movie's about. Yeah, but it probably shouldn't have been. Maybe for the book, that could have been what it's about. So I am giving the movie a thumbs up for a good, the stuff of a good story. It is extremely dramatic, what happened to this little boy, and a very cool true story about a community rallying around a family that's experiencing a tragedy. And it does make you kind of long for a world where that is the case, where everyone would hear of a tragedy in their midst and then kind of fall to their knees and ask God to intervene. I wanted to believe that we are still that kind of society watching breakthrough. So that's good. But I think that breakthrough could have been much stronger. But I am recommending it. And God willing, if it does well, we'll be able to do more and they'll get better. Stay tuned for the last segment of Church of Masses Radio. Thank you for tuning in.
This is Terry Barber inviting you, all the men, to a men's conference June 15th at the Sacred Heart Chapel. This is going to be a day where we're going to talk about true masculinity. You know, there's a problem in the Catholic Church today. We have very few men who love the Catholic faith. And I know a lot of the wives that I'm listening to right now are saying, I want my husband to be on fire for the faith. Send him to the men's conference. Your son, send him to the men's conference by going to virginmostpowerfulradio.org or call 877-526-2151. That's June 15th. When your husband comes back from this conference or your son, they're going to have a different view about their Catholic faith because they're going to meet three men who love Jesus and his bride, the church, and are going to instill in them a love for Christ and his church, the Eucharist, Our Lady. Bring them to virginmostpowerfulradio.org. Sign up there or call 877-526-2151. Full sheen ahead.
It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. Please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, CatholicRC.org.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Church of the Masses with Barbara Nicolosi.
Hello again, and welcome back to the last segment. Can't believe how fast the hours go by in radio. Really fast. Last segment of, I think it's our fourth show. So we're still in baby radio land here, still learning how to do this. And thank you for bearing with me, all of you. I'm still a little jerky at going in and out of the breaks, and God willing, we'll get better at that as we go along. But so this last segment is usually dedicated to Barbara's digital memories from a teaching standpoint, to talk about things that I've gone through as an artist, as a person working in media and culture, and as a Catholic, what have I learned? And so one thing I wanted to talk about today was, so I was on CBS this weekend. CBS Sunday Morning had a 15-minute spot about breakthrough and Christian film. And they had said to me, we want to do something positive for Easter. Because when I first talked to them, I said, yeah, well, most Christian movies are awful. And they said, yeah, well, we don't really want to say that. We want to say something cheery for Easter, something hopeful. And, you know, I said to the reporter in the break, and while he was interviewing me, you know, well, what did you think of the movie Breakthrough? And he said, well, honestly, if I didn't have to watch it for my job, I probably wouldn't have made it through the whole thing. He said, it was just wasn't my cup of tea. He said, but, you know, I get that these people like it are going to go out there and watch it. And you know, it's got to mean something that these movies are making money. So I've been thinking about that. And in fact, one of the things in the spot on CBS was they kept showing movies, Christian movies, and showing how much they cost and how much they made at the box office. You know, God's Not Dead was made for like $5 million and made $60 million. Heaven Is For Real was made for, I don't know, so, you know, $4 or $5 million and ended up making $40 million, you know, et cetera. I can only imagine made $60 or $70 million last year. So in the Hollywood standpoint, it's like, oh, this means you've done well. You've come back and made money. And one of the things I'm afraid of is that the Christians making movies are hearing that and saying, we're doing well, we're making money. And that isn't really the standard by which Christians should evaluate our media and culture projects. Does it mean anything at all? Yeah, I mean, I think that if you do make money, it shows you're tapping into something. But that doesn't necessarily mean it's something good. The pornography industry here in Los Angeles is actually a bigger industry than Hollywood. It makes $2 billion a year more than the Hollywood mainstream entertainment industry. By that standard, if money is the sign of success, then what are we going to do about that? And say, well, you know, these things, some things make money because they appeal to the basest side of us. They're fueled by what's the darkest side of human life. And that's very true in media and culture. But on the other side, you say, well, there's so many projects that Christians make that don't make anything. And if it wasn't for the kindness of, many Christian donors kind of writing checks, these things would never go anywhere. Because they're not good enough. So in some ways, financial success can mean something, but it certainly shouldn't mean anything, everything. And one of the things I'm looking at, listening to Christians talking about both the success of an Unplanned and Breakthrough is, they both have made their budgets back. Therefore, these are to be reckoned a success. I don't think so. I think that they should be reckoned a success for other reasons or not, right? So I think that the question is, how do we know we've done good work when we're talking media and culture in the church? How do we know it's actually good? And what is good work? I think the first part is the art form that you're working in. You want to know what the limits and potential of it are, and you want to avoid the limits, kind of hide and mask the limits, and you want to exploit to the highest degree the potential. What am I talking about? So something like, say, television. Television could be used in the church to tell stories. This is how it's a character-driven storytelling medium. This is how the world uses television. Think about any of the cable networks, HBO, all the major networks. They make their money by telling stories. AMC with The Walking Dead, Breaking Bad, The Sopranos, all of these television series. And now you have places like Amazon making series, say like Bosch or A Man in the High Tower, and Netflix making their own series. They did Longmire, they did House of Cards. If the power in television was talking heads, the way most Catholic media tends to use television, then the secular side would be doing it. But HBO isn't having a bunch of people sitting around a table with, and just preaching at you leftist values, because they know it's much more powerful to have a story and have characters that the audience kind of takes on vicariously, the character's life and decisions. So the idea of saying medium by medium, what are the limits here? What is the potential? Are we pushing the potential? So when we make television talking heads, for example, talk show, we do it because it's cheap. In the Catholic Church and in the Christian Church, the Protestants do it just as much as we do. It's cheap to have people sitting around talking, but you get what you pay for. And in terms of audience, who do you really attract to something like that? Well, you attract people who already agree with you, who are going to not need to be won over, who are not going to have any demands of entertainment, and in fact are going to cover all of your technical flaws because they basically agree with you. So as an evangelization effort, this is useless. This is not evangelization. This is catechesis. We are talking to people already in the program. And so the idea of saying, okay, well, when you talk about movies, what can a movie do? What is a movie supposed to do that makes it so powerful? One of the things that movies do that really make the art form itself, what defines the art form, is what we would call juxtapositions. So this is, in a frame, the use of imagery, poetic imagery, where things are going to be metaphors for other things, symbolic poetry using images. That this is the greatest filmmakers, people like Bergman and Coppola and Wilder and Hitchcock, et cetera, all the way moving up today. Scorsese is a genius at this, that they figure out how to take something that we can see and have it just replete with meaning, right? They're going to make it very metaphorical, and it's going to speak 1,000 words. You say a picture is worth 1,000 words. So movie stories should be taking advantage of visual poetry. When you look at a movie like Breakthrough or Unplanned, they're not even going there. They're not even trying. The reason is, my experience is that Christians are extremely afraid that if they leave anything at all up to the audience, that the audience won't get it. And we don't want to waste any time at all with our message. So we have to tell the audience minute by minute exactly what they're supposed to be thinking and feeling. And we're not going to leave them any space at all to process something that may be more artistic, and then try to come up with, what does this really mean to me? The line I've been saying for years is that as regards art, people of faith have no faith in people. They think that leaving anything at all to the audience, where the audience is going to have to wrestle with something and may come out in a place where we don't want them to, is we're not going to take that risk. So we're going to dictate to the audience in our stories exactly what they should be thinking. We're not going to have any subtext. We're going to be literal, and everything is going to work on one level. And so this is the scourge of so much Christian project. And I would say, unfortunately, Catholic filmmaking efforts are just as bad in this recent era. I don't see any symbolic efforts on the Catholic side that really work. The movie Paul Apostle tried, but it really didn't succeed. At least they tried, I suppose. So this is one of the, you say if you're going to make movies, it's about the visuals. It's about the visuals communicating on a level deeper than what the characters are saying. So that's another thing. You talk about the potential of cinema is layering, that you can be communicating with the audience on about seven different levels. So there's the soundtrack. But the soundtrack, you could say, well, there's the music can be giving one message, one level of meaning, and especially having to do with tone. The dialogue. Then you have the what's called the ambient sound. That's the sounds that we hear around the characters that they hear too. But then there's the non-diegetic sound. This is like this would be voiceover or any kind of thing that the characters don't hear, but that we can impose on the narrative from outside. And then you have the idea of the narrative itself and the choices the character's making. That's another whole level of meaning in the movie. And then the imagery in the movie, as I said, and the editing adds another level. So there's at least seven possible layers of communication in a movie where it's being done as a real work of art. My sense of most projects by Christians is that they're operating on two or three of those levels, if that, right? They're not exploiting the full potential of the medium. They don't even know what the limits and potential of the art form are. So one of the problems that I have a lot of times when people will say to me, I like that movie. And I say, well, what did you like about it? And they say, well, especially religious people, they say, well, it didn't have any sex, language, and violence in it. And I think, well, you don't begin praising a work of art by the words, what it didn't have in it. It's what it had in it. And unfortunately, we are going to need, being great artists involves learning all the parts, learning the complexity of the art form, and then really exploiting it to the highest potential that we're capable of. So this is my prayer. I hope we get there. But right now, that means people like me need to keep saying, yeah, we're not there yet. And yet, keep trying and hopefully we'll get better. Thanks so much for joining Church of the Masses. Stay tuned next week and we will keep it going. So thanks very much.
St. Faustina's Prayer for Priests. O my Jesus, I beg thee on behalf of the whole Church, grant it love and the light of thy Spirit, and give power to the words of priests, so that hardened hearts might be brought to repentance and return to thee, O Lord. Lord, give us holy priests. Thou thyself maintain them in holiness. O divine and great High Priest, may the power of thy mercy accompany them everywhere and protect them from the devil's traps and snares, which are continually being set for the souls of priests. May the power of thy mercy, O Lord, shatter and bring to naught all that might tarnish the sanctity of priests. For thou canst do all things. Amen. Virgin most powerful, pray for us.
Virgin Most Powerful Radio, sharing the gospel with clarity and charity.